You have so much experience, John. You have so much community building, development in all kinds of arenas. And when I went to read your bio from the monastery website, there's nothing there that points to that. So I thought we can talk about
I
that.
was born, ordained, and now I'm here in California.
That's right. So I'm gonna just leave it to you so you can talk about some challenges, some ways that are effective. How did Ajahn Chah do this? How are you doing this that we can, as a community, learn from all of your experience? Thank you.
Well, I think one of the things is first thing is that when we think of community and in the just in the traditional definition or description as Sangha, then when the Buddha himself describes Sangha as a like in the classical chanting of recollection of Sangha, recollection of the of community, then the emphasis is on the actual conduct or training or practice. In the scriptural language, then it begins with like Supatipanna Bhagavato Sāvaka Saṅkho, that the disciples of the blessed, or the blessed ones' disciples are those who practice well. So sup means sort of practice well, practice in a good way, practice with a foundation of goodness, so that there's a and then that is inevitably translated as having a foundation in sila, in virtue, in the kind of moral precepts, because that is what leads to that's what leads to trust, and that and then ucupatipanna, so practice directly, practicing for knowledge and understanding, practicing with integrity. And so though, but it's all around that sense of sense of integrity and being able to form bonds of trust, because harmony and a cohesive community doesn't arise, or it's very difficult to arise, if there's a sense of mistrust or uncertainty or even a kind of fear. So that the Buddha's how do you say, injunctions for conduct according to precept is not a moralistic one. It is a very practical one that leads, again, that leading to bonds of trust and bonds of and then it extends into, say, bonds of kindness and kindness and compassion, so that and generosity. Say, like one of the there's a discourse where the Buddha talks about the foundations of cohesion or harmony in a community, whether it's a small or large, in the sense of it could be a family unit or friends, or it could be larger community. The very first foundation is the foundation of loving kindness, that one treats each other with loving kindness by actions by body, actions by speech, actions by mind, so that those our actions of body, speech, and mind are guided or rooted in loving kindness. And then the next quality is one of sharing with each other material benefits, material gains, so bonds of generosity. And that sense of generosity, giving, sharing, is how, as human beings, how we connect with each other, and that generosity can be both in terms of material things, but also just in terms of service or things that we do, just taking the time out to check in on somebody, you know, how are you doing? And then being able to help each other in different ways, so that there's a, there's a, that quality of generosity is foundational. And then the final two are in terms of keeping a similar or a kind of consistent standards of say of virtue and integrity. In terms of conduct, that's sila again. And then the last one is around having a consistency and harmony of view, so that that sense of view in terms of perspective of what's important, what's not important, what's true, what's not true, so that sense of view. And that, again, that's not from a Buddhist perspective, it's not, say, an enforcement of some kind of doctrinal purity or something which just breaks people apart, but a sense of drawing close to people who share the similar values, similar goal, similar things that one feels are important. So that's where that view is really say necessary or important, and how it. So all of those things taken together are really kind of provide the glue for that kind of communal harmony. And creating community on a practical level, in terms of my own observations of living with Ajahn Chah, and I think that, you know, in terms of communities that I've seen and experienced, you know, I think Ajahn Chah has a probably the strongest example of a successful community, because I mean he has not been teaching. Or from last almost 10 years of his life, he was bedridden and not able to help himself or communicate. And then he passed away in 1992. So, but the communities are still, you know, pretty functional. And that's exceptional. I've been around to a lot of monasteries, and especially when the teacher dies, then tends not to hold together for very, very long, and then people are off to somewhere else. So but Ajahn Chah's, I think one of the unique characteristics of Ajahn Chah, of course, the standard of sila was very strong, and quality of virtue was very strong. And also that there was a period of time given to people to to make a commitment, and you had to commit to being to live with Ajahn Chah, and that's really important, the sense of commitment, giving oneself to a shared purpose, because most as human beings, we tend to, and certainly Americans, what's in it for me? But the kind of community that Ajahn Chah was, you're required to actually give in a certain, not in any material way, but you actually have to show up and be present and share life with people, and sharing life with people, that's really irritating and messy. So it's that sense of there is this core people who are committed to doing that. And that was the very, very first time that I met Ajahn Chah, paid respects, I arrived. I was already ordained as a monk. I'd been ordained in a city monastery. I was going to learn more about Buddhism, learn more about meditation, and then continue traveling and have my Buddhist experience. And I heard about Ajahn Chah, heard about forest monasteries. So that I went up, I arrived early in the morning, went to pay respects to the abbot, to Ajahn Chah, which is the appropriate protocol. And I might have finished doing my three bows. And Ajahn Chah just kind of looked at me and said, "You want to stay here, you have to stay at least 5 years." And that required commitment. And I didn't stay. It was sort of like, it was just too much. I went away, practiced in another place where I stayed for a little while. But I just, that whole, committing myself was just too much. But then I went away and I practiced in another place where I had solitude. I was able to organize my own routine the way I wanted it, and blah, blah, blah. But all of the, I just kept thinking of Ajahn Chah all the time, and the impression, the teachings, and the example of community, and the integrity of the whole community, and not just Ajahn Chah as an example, or the monks or the nuns as an example, but the lay community. There's the whole community who had this, you know, just incredible integrity and commitment. And I said, okay, this is, I need to do this if I want to really learn about how to live a human life in a skillful way. This is a really stellar example. So that sense of giving to a community, or making a commitment of something, and those commitments can be, you know, just in small increments as one feels confident in. Because oftentimes we go to some, okay, I've got to make a commitment. So let me make this grand idealistic statement and then set ourselves up for failure. That's problematic. So it's like you want to just be pushing that edge of, say, of commitment, of generosity, of integrity, in a way that we can grow into. And so that's another aspect. There's a practicality in the functioning of the community, that it has a very kind of nuts and bolts practical ways of functioning and living with each other and helping each other and practicing the Dhamma. And then over the years of living with Ajahn Chah, and then taking on responsibility for leading community, which I did in Thailand as the abbot of the International Monastery for about 15 years, and then coming to America and setting up a Vaigiri, just continuing to learn and experiment and try to create a community that is able to sort of follow those principles. And one of the ways of doing it it's not just a meditation community or a mindfulness community. I mean, there needs to be, you have a along with the mindfulness, along with the meditation, is also times of especially in the world, that there's times of actually, say, one looking after a place, and then looking after the people around one in some way, so that there is something beyond the individual, and then that individual is integrated into a larger whole. And that's where a commitment is, or that giving. And in doing that, then, it pushes up against our edges sometimes, but that's where we learn. And it's also where, and it isn't always going to be successful, and it isn't always going to be beautiful, but being willing to, being willing to learn, being willing to share and give, and that's where that foundation of trust is so important. See, these things all work together, so that when there is those foundations of trust and a sense of shared commitment, then okay, yeah, things can go pear-shaped and difficult, and you can work through that and lift it up as something to be able to learn from. So that's because that's also what they say in terms of the whole path of the Buddhas is a path of learning, of education. With the Eightfold Path, oftentimes it's presented as sila, samadhi, panya, virtue, meditation, wisdom, and those are called sikha, the three trainings. But that the three trainings in Buddhism are, that word also is education, learning, study, so that we're studying and learning through our actions and our meditation and our reflections are in the discernment, so that those are aspects that are important, and sharing that path and working with each other. A really important aspect of community or sangha from a Buddhist perspective.